Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show once again. Thanks to Grassland Agro and ESB Networks for helping us make this show happen. The weather is a bit more mixed this week, but it's still all systems go in the fields. This week I joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Aidan Brennan. First up, it's the quickfire round. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 0868 366 4665. Right, Adam, first up on the quickfire.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Two here in for you. First one, do I need to get an advisor to tell me what fertilizer to spread? That's all I have, Adam. Nothing more, no more detail, no nothing. I must be on the back of something that you obviously advise.
Yeah, and I got an email from a farmer as well. And look, I didn't mean to imply maybe in last week's article around what fertilizer I could spread on my farm. Just saying, in terms of it's really important to not exceed your P indexes or your nitrogen we'll say spreading allocation for your farm, because if you do, there's big penalties there, and we have that obviously in the paper this week. But no, you can work it out yourself. You can go on there and look at your P tables and look at your K tables and look at your nitrogen spreading limits on your farm, and you can work it out. But I suppose I was saying for some farmers it might be easier just to go to your advisor to get them to look at it as regard, just because of all those little changes this year.
Yeah, good luck trying to get them there now before the middle of May, like, you know. But anyway, it's as you say, it is complicated, and the tables, there's a lot of tables there on page 41. Darren has a piece.
Yes, Darren goes into a lot of detail this week on it, and yeah, that's a follow on probably from the previous week. Yeah.
Excellent. Second question for you, Adam. In Skep, I DNA registered my calves. Do I still need to wait to get tags from ICBF to hit the genotyping target for this year?
No. So this is a change this year in terms of previous years or around this time of the year that Skep tags would come out to all Skep participants, and they would select the animals that were to be genotyped on your farm. And there was always a bit of consternation there around, I suppose, those tags coming out in April or May, because cattle were obviously just gone outdoors and in terms of coming back in then to be tagged. But this year, for participants in the DNA registration program, they don't need to do that. They don't need to wait on to get Skep tags or need to wait to get ICBF to select the animals for genotyping. That's all done and dusted at basically calf registration stage. Anybody that's not participating in the DNA calf registration program, they will still have to wait on their tags and tag the animals as ICBF dictate to them.
Super job. Back to you in a minute, Adam. Darren, two quick fires in here for you. Wonder what's Darren's advice on this heading into the bank holiday weekend. I see price looking to slide. Where does he think that's going? Talk to me, Darren, up or down?
Yeah, Jack. It's a date in the calendar every year that sheep farmers are normally afraid of, because it sort of marks a move by factories generally to try and pull price. And I'd say we're probably going to see a bit more of that. We've seen prices being pulled by 10 to 20 cent a kilo. There's talk of another maybe 20, 30 cent a kilo cuts coming over the weekend. So the one thing I'd say is there's no point people panicking to have, say, spring lambs to sell and start killing underflesh to underweight lambs, that it's a false economy too, but to maybe draft a bit more regular and take advantage of the high prices while they're there.
Okay, second quick fire in here for you, Darren. Considering I have 3 years of wool in the shed, what is it looking like for the year ahead? Here's someone, Darren, that's hoping for a wool bonanza at some stage. Like, is it coming in 2024?
Well, do we want to ruin that listener's weekend, or do we want to...
No good news coming here.
Well, if he's hoping for 3 years, or she's hoping for 3 years, I'm afraid I'm going to burst the bubble a bit. There's no bright shoots on the horizon, Jack. Like, yeah. The British wool, say, sales of recent, say, weeks. So generally, sort of a British wool hold a sale every fortnight, or they push it out to a month as we move, say, into the season. But the last couple of sales, there's been a 70% clearance. Price has maybe been steady to a bit easier, and that's only because they have taken back wool and haven't sold at the price that they've had it at. And then coming closer to home, you're looking at anywhere from 5 cents for Scotch wool to 20 cents for lowland wool, and there's nothing on the horizon that would say that's going to jump. Still challenges in, say, wool demand in China, who's the main, I suppose, maybe buyer and dominates the trade, and that's the forecast would say that's not going to change.
Excellent. Thanks, Darren. Back to you in a minute. Aidan, looking at you too. Two quick fires in here for you. My grass has gone very yellow after I spread urea. Normally I spread a compound at this time of the year, but didn't get to it this year. What should I do next? Aidan, I've no more detail again. Just talking.
It's a common enough issue. I've heard a good few farmers mention something like that, Jack. And I suppose it's maybe at the back of what Adam was talking about there, that farmers this year have rolled back on spreading compound because they're not sure if they're an allowance or not. But also, I suppose a lot of lads didn't get the nitrogen out early enough. So when the opportunity did come to spread nitrogen back a couple of weeks ago, they went with, you know, urea or can or something like that instead of the 18-6-12, which maybe would be the normal thing. So I suppose yellow grass is a combination of not just lacking something, but it's also the weather. And I mean, it has been kind of harsh the last week in particular. Mm. So you see a lot of fields that have been grazed recently, they're coming back kind of browny and yellow. So I wouldn't be overly worried about it, Jack. Growth rate is low anyway. And but I mean, if the fields are low in P and K, then they need P and K. So yeah, that's your problem. But if the field is sufficient in PK, it doesn't need additional PK. So I wouldn't be too worried about it. Get soil samples taken. If it's probably too late now, but maybe you have them at the end of the year and you'll know for next year. But definitely, you know, if it's low in PK, it needs it. But
it needs to be fixed. Yeah. And
I know that's not a great answer to that person.
No, but I mean, he or she should fix that now in this time of the year rather than waiting to the back end. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. But I wouldn't be just going on the colour of it. Like, you know, you need more detail than that.
Absolutely. Excellent, clear. Last one for you, Aidan. Soil samples came back good for pH. Do I still need lime for reseeding?
It depends. Again, this is a common question, Jack. It depends on the type of reseeding you're doing. If it's ploughing and the pH is fine, you don't need additional lime. But if you're going doing mint till, you do need the lime, because what happens in a mint till, so that's mint, when I say mint till now, I mean going in with a power harrow and seed drill combination, or an earth seeder, or more uni drill, or a gutler, or some sort of an einbock or something like that, that you're not ploughing with, basically anything that you're not ploughing with, including disking. So if you're disking, you need the lime as well. And the reason for that is because the old trash is going to die away. That's the existing swarr that's there that's now burnt off. And when that dies away, then it could turn acidic. So it could be surface acidity on the soil if you don't spread lime. So the lime will counteract that. So it's good practice to spread 2 tons per acre when reseeding.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Nice one. Excellent. Back to you in a couple of minutes, Aidan. Adam, if I come back to you in terms of a couple of the issues that you're tackling this week, one of the pieces you have, and it's obviously very timely the time of the year, is getting cows back in calf. Like, where are you, or what has changed, we'll say, in terms of getting suckler cows back in calf?
Sure, look, Jack, it's been a tough spring, you know. Sure, we've talked about that lots of times, but in terms of poorer quality forage might be going into cows that are delayed in turnout. You know, some farmers are buying silage, maybe some of the quality that silage wasn't hectic. And especially early calf cows, it was hard to keep condition up there. And we're seeing a couple of farms across the country now, and even talking to farmers, you know, they're a little bit worried about body condition score on cows, that they've dropped a lot over the last maybe couple of weeks. You know, a cow maybe calf 4 or 6 weeks that would usually be going straight to grass, was inside in the shed, and maybe if silage quality wasn't good and enough meal wasn't going in there, they were losing condition. And that's not good for coming back into heat again. You need a cow to be sort of up at 2.5, 3 in terms of a body condition score. You need her maybe to begin a little bit of weight. And that's the whole idea of getting out to spring grass and gaining weight on spring grass. That hasn't happened. So we're thinking there could be a little bit of a delay there on some farms. And look, there's just a bit of advice there around if you thought that condition was poor, maybe meal obviously is an option there, maybe in terms of going in with some meal to try and get them across the hump until grass supplies really come up and cattle get back out again. Twice a day sucking is another really good way to try and do that. Now, that's difficult when cattle go outside.
But I know when you're part-time farming as
I know,
well.
But funny, I know farmers doing it and they get into a bit of a routine there, and the calves actually just Aye. Cows stay in and cows go out. So cows are waiting at a gate there every evening or that. Look, it's not ideal on every farm, but it may mean bringing cows back into heat maybe 3 or 4 weeks earlier than would have been if you're not doing that.
I mean definitely it's a real option, and like that's an old one. Like, I mean, that's been around a long time, Adam.
Michael Diskin and Hatton Rye, I think that was the first research done on that many years ago. But looking at bulls as well, Jack, in terms of a lot of bulls changing hands over the last couple of weeks, and we're saying sort of 20 cows per young bull, maybe 30 cows, 35, maybe a very mature bull in terms of that, you know that everything's working okay. But for a young bull, you're talking maybe even 15 if he's a very young bull, but definitely maximum 20 for that young bull.
Okay. Your sector, Adam, I'll call it the suckler sector, has come in for a lot of kind of, and look, it's not just the suckler sector, but the livestock sector in general has come in for a lot of kind of criticism and a lot of heat. Like, there's a Frank O'Mara has a piece there on his sustainability page this week on the kind of the role of livestock and how it works into the system of farming. Like,
this is as a result of a lecture that Frank gave up in Belfast at the British Society of Animal Science at the beginning of April. But it's a really balanced view. And any of the debate I have seen with maybe livestock versus crops has always been very one or the other, but this takes a holistic view of everything and just looking at different sort of aspects of livestock production across Europe. Like, I didn't realize 58% of farms across Europe have livestock on their farms. And he's just sort of making the argument that it's not a case that you just get rid of livestock, that they're a really integral part of everything. And even in terms of cropping, in terms of, he talks of this circularity of, we'll say, agricultural systems, that you have animals there recycling nutrients out onto other areas. He talks about global food, you know, consumption increasing by 1.3% over the next 10, 15 years as a result of a growing population. And again, quite balanced maybe in terms of, and it's in the piece on the page, that, that livestock systems have created habitat loss and have created biodiversity loss, but it's not a case of just throwing them out. And you know, in terms of, I think it's 6 billion tons of dry matter that the world produces, right, annually. The vast majority of that, I think it's 50 or 60%, wouldn't be able to be converted to human edible food. You know what I mean? In terms of if we hadn't got livestock. So livestock convert an awful lot of that, we'll say, grass and leaves into human edible protein. So, and then just looking where we're going from there, he talks about water quality, and that's all in the piece. It's a really balanced piece. It's the first time I've seen that argument, maybe, you know, holding our hands up maybe for some of the things that has gone wrong, but saying that, you know, in terms of maybe research and Chagas' role in that, in terms of moving forward, that there definitely is a pathway there to keep livestock there, and they're very, very important.
Excellent. Tell me, what happened to trade this week? Adam, up or down?
Yeah, pretty steady, Jack. I suppose, you know, beef trade bobbing along there, 5.15 probably for bullocks, 5.20 for heifers. That's been the same crack for the last couple of weeks. Speaking to somebody across the water this week in the industry, they reckon numbers are going to get tight over there. Europe's probably a little bit sluggish. Looking at the Borbia beef tracker, the market tracker, you know, some of those countries in Europe maybe aren't up where we'd want them to be, and that's probably causing the Irish price to be a little bit ahead in terms of beef tracker at the moment. March trade really, really well. 3.92 we're up to for the average price for the top quality bull weanlings in the 300 to 400 kilo bracket. You'd love to see that hitting €4. We're running with 3.92 this week on the market bids analysis. And bullocks as well, you know, those grass bullocks, 400 to 500 kilos, very hot property this week. Kilkenny had a massive sale up on 1500 last Thursday. And a really, you know, bullocks, I think 800 kilo bullocks heading for 2700 there, which was probably unheard of.
Wow. I mean, how much is the live exports piece still kind of feeding in, Adam, into that? Like, you know what I mean? Or what has it been like for the kind of the first 4 months of the year, for to look back now? Here we go.
It's a tale of two halves, Jack. We've got weanlings and stores going really well. We've got that Sarah M heading for, she's in Grenoble this week, going to be loaded again for I think it's going to North Africa. We've got, you know, store cattle going really well to those sort of Middle Eastern markets as well. But calves is a wee bit concerning. I think we're down 14%. The majority of that is down from the Netherlands, down on numbers. Spain is actually up 10%. But in terms of those bigger animals, that seems to be the story of 2024. And I'd say we could hit record weanland and store cattle exports for 2024 if we keep going the way we're going, because the numbers that are moving out. You see, market managers, speaking to a couple of market managers this week in the West, they're actually putting on special weanland sales now for exporters to try and get weanlands out to sale, to get volume out, because there is very little weanlands out there to be sold at the moment.
I mean, that's going to tighten up the whole job, isn't it, Adam? Like, kind of looking into the back end, you know, the kind of a way, like if they're really trying to shift, you know, I mean, so, you know, it's hard to see factories are going to be tight kind of the whole way through, kind of, really, is what you're telling me, like.
Yeah, because we're already up 15 or 16,000 head of cattle on 2023, and Borby estimates would show that we're going to go down 30 or 40,000. So we talked about that before. That big swing has to take place, and I would imagine that will take place towards the back end of the year. And because at the moment you're probably having some cattle coming out that should have went to grass, that stayed in the shed, are going to be finished out of the shed. So that's keeping sort of supplies maybe a little bit higher than they would be usually at this time of year. So I'd say further on, we'll see a big drop in numbers, and I'd say you'll see an increase in beef price, hopefully as a result of that.
Adam, your big focus this week, shows and showing. It's getting into that time of the year again. Things begin to warm up.
Yeah, exactly. Look at Balmoral, I suppose, is where we kick it off. For that's coming up now in 3 weeks' time. It's hard to believe, but we're around there again. And look at Shannon done a great job this week on a shows and showing supplement. A full list of the shows there. So anybody going to shows, that's a definite cutout there in terms of marking off what your local shows are and where you're going. She talked to Eamon McGarry as well, from the North, one of the top showmen in the North of Ireland, on his tips around preparing animals and bringing them out. So that's a real good field focus, and there's lots of information. Obviously, we launched as well the FBD, Irish Farmers Journal, Irish Shows Association, a young stock person competition last week. So that's back on the cards again, and all the qualifying events is in the paper this week.
Good job. I finish up on this. Adam, you were down with Aidan down in Carn Mart at the IFA MEP, debate or bit of a chat anyway, at least with the candidates for the upcoming European election. Like, what, you know, so the focus obviously was on food and farming and what these candidates can bring to that audience. What did you take from it?
I thought it was good, Jack. I suppose the big one for me was the derogation and the amount of energy in the room, I would say, for that derogation. That was obvious in the part of the country that we're in. It was really, really important, I suppose, for Farmer to come out and hear these people. These people are going to have a say in policy, in European policy, in the next, you know, 4 or 5 years if they get elected. So it's really, really important. And I'd urge for the rest of them going around the country, I think they're going to Mayo and Mullingar and down to Kilkenny in the next week or 10 days. Really important for Farmer to come out there and question. There was loads of opportunity that night to ask questions to the candidates and put the candidates on the spot for issues that are really important to you. So I'd urge people to go out and listen to them and see what they stand for.
Excellent. Thanks, Adam. Back to you next week. Darren, looking to start here first with you on the big one. It's the BIS is getting within, we're within the kind of the 2 week deadline. I see you've numbers there saying that it's only 50% of applicants have submitted. Are we going to, it's going to be a big rush for the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, Jack, those figures the department gave them to us, say, now it's the 28th of April, so it's earlier on in the week. So I imagine this, you would have had a significant cohort of applications in this week. But even at that, so take 61,000, there generally is around 128,000. It'll leave over half of the applications to come in the final sort of 2.5-3 weeks. Like, so it's a tall order. Now, we do know from previous years' experience that there's some amount of work done now in the next sort of the bank holiday weekend heading into next week. Advisors, farmers, there's a lot of applications in over that, but still, Jack, it'll be tight going to get all the applications in. And what I'd be saying to farmers, particularly if they've any, say, significant changes or a bit of work to do, make contact with your advisor if you're doing it to an advisor, because leaving it any later, it'll really be pushing it. So I think this is a big job of work to do, but there will be a big rush. I'd say that when we're talking next week, I imagine that figure will be up near 90,000.
Okay, we'll hold you to that, and we'll have a chat about it again next week, Darren. The other piece, I'll call it scheme related, that I want to just touch off, Darren, is that piece on the skip and that suckler scheme in terms of the online training, the mandatory online training. Talk to me. What's required there?
Yeah, that's the most important word, Jack, in it, mandatory. So if a farmer doesn't complete the training by the 15th of November, they will be excluded or removed from the scheme, and there will be full clawback of any payments received. So that you'll be paying back the money you've received last year. So it is significant now, Jack. It's important. Essentially what it is it's very close to the sort of the FOSS style training that agricultural advisors have to do. So it's split into modules to allow farmers to come and go from it. So there's 7 modules, which will take about 30 minutes each. So in total, you're looking at about 3.5 hours is probably the minimum time to do it. So a half a day is training. It tallies with what was in the terms and conditions. I suppose the one flexibility that's in it is that you could do maybe half an hour now, half an hour again. But on the other side, I'm getting a bit of feedback from maybe people that are accustomed to doing working, say, online, that haven't access to maybe good broadband, that type of thing. So look, there will be niggling issues, there will be teething issues. I see the ICSA came out and they were saying that there needs to be an alternative option for farmers that can't access online. Time will tell whether that's... I suppose maybe enacted. I'd say probably for now, Jack, it'll be the online option. And it's only, I'd say, if it really comes to it, that there might be another option. But if farmers can do it and can start to walk away with it, I'd say they should maybe strike while the iron is hot and do those applications.
That door is open now, Darren. They can start it now, yeah.
That door is open now. Some people won't have got the letter. So essentially what happens is a letter comes with a PIN. You put in your herd number, you have to have a valid email address, you put in the PIN number, that activates the account, and that's, you can come and go from that. If the letter hasn't came, the letters are up online on agfood.ie already, so somebody can have it, or if they lose the letter, they'll be able to get back in and get their PIN number that way. But there's a couple of steps to it. You have to activate your account, the same as, I suppose, if you're activating online banking or that, keep that password, and then you can come and go to it as you please. There's a quiz to do at the end of each module, But if you fail that first time, you can continue to say complete it again.
Yeah, okay. So it won't be put to the pin of your collar. Excellent. Right, look, good reminder. Needs to be done. The other, I'll call it a relatively tedious piece this week, Darren, is that whole piece around, I've touched off it with Adam and Aidan and you previously as well last week, in terms of the phosphorus piece, the big story this week in terms of that, listen, this could impact your BIS payment in terms of a penalty if you over exceed what P allowance you have for your farm. I mean, Darren, like it can be very technical for those that are not doing numbers on a weekly basis, for guys that are definitely kind of just, they, you know, week or year in, year out, they go out and buy cutsward for that bit of hay or for that bit of silage or whatever. And, you know, I mean, a lot of them mightn't have the allowance for P and they're going to get caught this year because of the fertilizer register effectively. Like, isn't that kind of where we are on this piece?
That's exactly, Jack. So, like, the couple of things that farmers can do is to know their stock and weight first, because that's one determinant. If you're above 130 kilos of organic nitrogen, if you've no side samples, well, then there's no point buying any fertilizer P. So just be like, that's a very simple step to take. If you're below 130 kilos of organic nitrogen, you assume index 3, which is also a very low sort of P level. So you'd say that in the absence of soil samples, for a lot of farmers, they don't really have much of allowance to buy P, particularly if they're buying a few ton of meal at all, because if you buy a ton of meal, you're deducting 5 kilos from it. So what I'd be saying is that if farmers can, that they should be taking a few strategic side samples. I know a lot of farmers will have, say, fertilizer out now on silage ground, but even when silage is maybe picked up, that you could take a sample in. The recommendation is generally sort of 3 months after you spread P or K or slurry, that you come in, whether that be slurry or fertilizer, that you come in and you take a side sample. But if it's a while before, since you've taken a sample and you're not putting out a big volume, the nitrogen is going to be used out, or we don't take nitrogen through a side sample anyway, and at least you have some indication of it then. Or else you'll have to wait till the back end of the year to get your soil samples. And just mind and be careful of what P you're buying, because it does have an impact. Like, it does, as you say, it can lead to a penalty on it.
Excellent. Look, you've a great page on there this week that'll kind of summarise the problem and the challenge that's there for some farms in terms of the stocking rate and knowing how much P you can spread. Page 41, I think, in the journal there this week. Darren, I'll leave you and finish up on the trade, I suppose, and kind of any particular movements. Like, I suppose we just need to couch this, that we are talking about record prices, you know, for the time of the year for your spring lambs, we'll say, at this time of the year. Like, do you reckon it's going to hold up for much longer, or where do you reckon it's landing?
Yeah, it all depends, Jack, on how sort of resolute the factories are in that the day pull price and numbers tighten a bit further, what's going to happen. Now, one factory agent said to me this week, he made a point and said, so Ginny, it can't be any worse than the numbers we are getting at the moment. Like, the kill has been under 35,000 head for the last 2 weeks, like historically low for this time of the year, 17,000 head lower than this time last year. So it depends on whether factories sort of sit in, dig in tight. I expect there's going to be further pulls over the weekend in price. We see that over the bank holiday. And it'll depend on sort of the start of the week then on sort of who blinks first. That I do think that it'll probably turn off the tap a bit on your hoggets. I think that they will start to decline a small bit. There is some farmers out there that have been killing away at your hoggets while the prices were high. But if you're now in a scenario that they don't have many left, I think that some of them might take the chance on, well, we'll hold to the autumn breeding sales and see what that is like. So that could further tighten numbers coming on stream as well. So it'll be an interesting few days. The feedback I get, Jack, from some processors is that there has been a significant kickback at retail level to the high prices. There is some availability of cheaper, say, product across Europe now as product comes on stream in greater quantities in domestic markets, and that is creating or by adding into a bit of this resistance. So if there is resistance at processor level and are finding it hard to move volumes, it'll, I suppose, give them an incentive to hold or to dig in. But it just depends on numbers, Jack. It really does sometimes when you do get a bit of a pull in price, it does flush out numbers onto the market, and it also adds into the factory side. So like I'd be saying, look with the farmers is to be draft and regular, as we've said all sort of spring, draft what's fit, and don't be killing or sending direct to the factory under fleshed animals, because there is still good demand in the mart for animals for feeding on, particularly in an era where there's a lot of farmers that have sold yo hoggets, that there is even some farmers looking at even buying, say, strong spring yo lambs and that type of thing. So there is opportunities there that will hopefully help steady the trade as well.
Thanks, Darren. Thank you. Talk to you next week. Aidan, looking to you. I finished up with Adam there in terms of the MEP debate down in Carnmark during the week. You were down with him trying to tease out the best candidates for the job. What did you take of it? Adam was suggesting that the importance of the derogation came home loud and clear.
Yeah, I'm sure the farmers in the audience rep were very clear on it, as were the IFA speakers at the start. I mean, what was less, I suppose, well, in fairness, they were clear enough in their views. The MEP candidates also, not all of the candidates there on the night were going to support the derogation if they were elected to the parliament. So we had Grace O'Sullivan, I suppose, was the one that gave the most surprising of them. So Grace is a sitting MEP for the Green Party. And she said that she would support the derogation if water quality was sufficient. If water quality was good enough, she would support the derogation. Whereas Lorna Bogue was against the derogation. If memory serves me right on what was said. So that was the difference there, I suppose. All the other mainstream party candidates, I suppose you could say, Jack, were in support of the derogation. And that was, it was good to see that there was strong support from the panelists for it. Like, but I mean, it was really hammered home on the night, the importance of it. Ty Buckley put out figures there of you know, it's worth €1 billion to the Irish economy. It's €23,000 of income for every dairy farm with, you know, that the derogation adds, and I think it's 1,100 jobs to support. So it's just huge, like, you know. So that was the key thing. And as Adam said, like, you know, Cork and that part of Munster, all along the southeast, it's an essential part of it. I'm sure we'll get it again next week in Kilkenny.
Yeah. Excellent. Right. 100%. We leave that there. I mean, Aidan, coming back to the farm in terms of, I suppose, what's happening. I was talking to some of the lads in the southeast there this week. The grazing conditions, ground conditions are turned a little bit tricky again.
Yeah, there was a lot of rain in parts of Wexford and other parts along the east coast, Jack, were very wet this week, in fact. And I suppose, like, we would have expected that land would be to take it after a dry week, but it just goes to show that any bit of rain at all, that's, I know, in fairness, they got over an inch of rain in 24 hours, so it was heavy rain, but land became extremely wet again. Now that's not seen as much elsewhere in the country, even down, you know, in heavier parts of the country that did get rain, they're probably holding it up a little bit better than that. So it's kind of an extreme situation in along the east coast at the moment. But the look, there's nothing special about the weather. Is kind of what people are telling me. If it was any other year, you'd be giving out about it. But the fact that it was so wet for all along, the fact that it's reasonably dry now, we're kind of taking it and satisfied with it. But it's not groaty weather, like, and we're into May now, so we need groaty weather to come. Look, I think it's there, Jack. I think it's on the way. Looking at the forecast, warmer temperatures are coming, and that's going to have a big impact on it. So I would expect to see, you know, you're going to get into the 60s, 70s, 80s of growth rates over the next 10 days or so, and we'd need to see it.
And Aidan, what are lads doing to put the foot down now, kind of in terms of nitrogen, or trying to kind of keep, as you say, to maximise growth when they can now? Like, I mean, are they trying to do that? Are they trying to maximise now with bag fertiliser going out now to try and maximise it?
Yeah, well, they should be, Jack. I think is what I'm saying this week in the Farmers Journal anyway, in the management notes, that like, now is the time to get the best response out of nitrogen. So if there's any time of the year to spread nitrogen, now is the time to do it, because you're going to get at least 35, if not 40 kilograms of nitrogen from every kilograms of grass from every kilogram of nitrogen applied per hectare. So that's a very high response. I mean, over the course of the year, that might be 20. So you're almost getting double the response now. So silage pits are empty in many farms. It's a really good opportunity to rebuild those silage pits by growing as much grass as possible over the next 6 or 8 weeks, and putting the surplus grass into the pit and having it there, building up the stock. So the advice I'm going with this year, Jack, is a unit of nitrogen per acre, for every day. So if you're on a 21-day round, spread 21 units of nitrogen. That's higher than what we would, probably would have been advising previously. You know, that was the old advice. And then we went back to 0.7 and or 0.8 of a unit per day during the peak growing season. And yeah. I just think we need to ramp it up a little bit this year because we have, you know, most farmers don't have a buffer of silage in place. You're going to get a good response to it. The cost of fertilizer has decreased. The utilization of that is very high, so the risk of it leaching is low. For me, there's more benefits of going a little bit stronger than there are of going a little bit lighter. So that's what I'm thinking. Now, look, Jack, I suppose it's a little bit messed up this year because farmers in the main, now I'm talking about, they all kind of went out in the last 10 days with nitrogen. So yeah. It's not as though we're kind of, normally we'd be following the cows and we'd have two or three rounds of nitrogen out already, whereas yeah. a lot of farmers only have one. So they're kind of, it's a wait and see effort at the moment. And they probably go with a blanket spread, maybe a third of the farm in the next week or so again, and then follow then, you know, wait another week and go a third again or something like that, of that type, you know, because it's not that long ago since a lot of nitrogen was spread.
Yeah, and is it going to create problems, Aidan, in terms of it all coming together? You know what I mean, to an extent that stepped approach there in terms of grazing wasn't there, and it's going to maybe lead to a lot of grass in some farms.
It will, yeah, and I think people would be a mistake not to think that's going to happen. Even though there's not much grass in farms now, like you're going to see the wedges climb dramatically. They're all low now, so you have a very flat wedge in many farms. But like that just means that there's going to be a lot of silage have to be taken whenever growth does come, and that's, you know, there's probably a week or two of a lag after that happens. So you're probably talking about 2 or 3 weeks time, like towards the middle of May now, I'd say, to be, you know, be hoping that there'll be a lot of bales made on farms and first cuts bulking up. But like they need to bulk up because there's not much grass in them at the moment.
It'll be all needed, so is what you're saying. Like, I mean, often at this time of the year, Aidan, you'd hear guys suggesting that, listen, I'm going to leave in 2, 3, 4 kilos of meal per cow per day so that I can keep the stocking rate a little bit higher, not use up as much land and close a bit more ground for silage. Like, anything to be said for, like, if silage reserves are low?
You know, I've looked at this in the management notes this week again, like, and it doesn't make sense to me because the substitution effect of meal isn't great. Like, so if you're feeding 2 kilos of nuts in the parlour, you might think that the cows are going to eat 2 kilos less grass in the field. Mm. That doesn't happen. You know, usually now they might and it depends on the cow and how much feed is going in and all the rest, but they might eat a kilo less. So 50% substitution effect there, I suppose. Now the meal is going to cost you, Jack, if it's €300 a ton, which is a decent price for meal at the moment now, you know, there's a lot of farmers will be paying more than that. That's about 30 cents a kilo. So it's an expensive, if you're feeding two and you're saving one, it's an expensive way of building up silage. Whereas if you're going out with the nitrogen and if it's a euro a kilo of N and you're getting 30 kilos of grass out of that, like, you're, you know, it's 3 or 4 cents. It's very small money for that additional amount of grass you're going to grow. Now look, there's a law of diminishing returns with nitrogen. It's not spreading 60 units is not the same as spreading you're not going to get an exponential increase the more you go on, or a continuous increase, I should say, the more you spread. So I'd still be going with, you know, 25, 30 units after each grazing. Right. If you're on a typical round, kind of a round length, a little bit less than that, maybe 21, 22 kilo units per acre after a 21-day round.
I hear you. So you're saying, like, the money is better spent on the nitrogen if you have the ground and have the capacity to kind of close up more for silage. You're better off spending it on the nitrogen. You get a better bang for your buck than you would have put it into meal. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And look, I mean, there's farmers then talk about, but you get the rest. I'm not mentioning the return in milk, you know, but there's not going to be much return in the milk either. Like, so particularly not at current, kind of the way cows are milking at the minute anyway. Milk yield is low. A lot of farmers are gone past their peak at the minute. And so no, I wouldn't consider that there's an economic return from feeding the ration just to drive milk production. I mean, there's enough going in at the moment.
Excellent. Aidan, two things, breeding and milk price I want to talk about. So let me see, we'll start with breeding, we'll stay on farm, and in terms of, I suppose, what's happening, there's obviously a lot of heifers being synchronised and even probably cows being synchronised because of the fixed time piece, Aidan. Is that fair to say? And is the sex semen piece really kicking off now? Here we are in 2024.
Yeah, and Jack, like, you know, it depends on where you are in the country, obviously, but there a lot of that synchronization would have finished by now. I mean, a lot of those were designed to be bred the first days of the breeding season. So, like, we're now where the early days of May. If you're starting breeding the 27th, 28th of April, you'd have that done already. Or even if you're a bit later, it's the 1st of May, you'll have that completed now. So you're hoping at this stage that they're in calf, whether they're cows or heifers. And a lot of farmers are using, well, I wouldn't say a lot, but some farmers are synchronizing that portion of the cows that they want to get heifers from. They're putting seeders into them, and they're all coming into heat then the one day, and that's your sex semen job. They're done then, and then the rest of it then is going to be AI beef bulls on all the rest of the cows that, as they come in, and the repeats of those cows as well. So that some people are at that, but you know, so that's kind of out of the way at this stage. In the main, Jack, I'm hearing the farmers are saying the submission rate is lower than it should be. So when they work out how many cows they should have coming into heat every day, there's a little bit lower than that. And I suppose you could point to the weather there as well, Jack, like cold nights. Cows are still under a little bit of pressure, I would say. They're still looking a bit shaggy, as I say, and a bit, you know, rugged looking. And it's not ideal conditions, like, you know, so you'd expect that they're going to have weaker heats or missed heats. You know, they're not budding mad. And some cows are, obviously, but like it's... So I wouldn't worry about it, though, I suppose is the point of making. They'll come, you know, you get them in time. Don't be, you know, just know where you stand. It's nice to know whether you're where you stand on it. And, you know, there's an easy sum there. If you're expecting to get 90% of your cows submitted, divide 90% of your herd by 24. So I'd say a 24-day submission rate would be what you should be looking at, because cows will breed naturally anywhere between 18 and 24 days. So that'll tell you, you know, if whatever it's going to be, like your three or four or five or six or 10 cows per day should be coming in, and then get an average of that over the week to know whether you're on target or not.
Excellent, 100%. Aidan, milk price, you've been talking to a number of the big milk co-ops over the last couple of weeks, I suppose, looking ahead into reviewing 2023, first of all, and I suppose looking ahead into 2024 in terms of where their thinking is short-term and maybe long-term on milk price. If we take the easy one first, Aidan, short-term in terms of where you see milk price or where they're talking about where milk price is going, and obviously couching this in that you're talking to the executives, the management, like we say, as opposed to the board who are actually setting the milk price. But what are some of the executives saying?
Yeah, well, I'd say the long-term one is easier, Jack, than the short-term one. Long-term, we're positive. In the short-term, it's more mixed, you know, and each of the CEOs, and as you say, they are CEOs, not the chairman, they're each of them are kind of has a different outlook on it. Some are more positive than others. I mean, the Dairy Gold were more negative. Michael Hart down there, he was a little bit more negative, cautious on milk price, you'd have to say, was saying that we're paying more than the market is returning right now. And that was a similar team from Tyrlon as well. They were saying that it was Sean Malai said, the incoming CEO was saying that, like, we'll be under pressure to, we'll keep base price, he said. But like their base price is not the price the farmers are getting at the moment, because there was a 3 cent a litre, including the VAT, top up there for the weather included in that. So my suspicion is that they'll end up kind of converting some of that support price into the base price over the next while. I'd say it'd be very hard particularly for their suppliers to stomach the fact that they're going to have a net effect of a drop in milk price over the coming months, when you consider the pressure that cash is under and many farms, and it's even under more pressure then for the board to agree to such a cut. So that's kind of my take on it. Lakeland then were much more positive, Jack. You know, when I was speaking to Conan Kelly, he was more optimistic on price, particularly maybe for the second half of the year. But for the, you know, in the short term, he was saying that, you know, confident that things would hold up pretty well. So I suppose they're all, you know, have a different kind of a view on it. But it depends, I suppose, on where they are in terms of their cycle, in terms of forward selling. Like, a lot of them know what's going to happen. They've their product sold already for the next 3 or 4 months, so they know what's happening. But I suppose there's a bit of horse trading to be done between all the different levels, yeah, and competing among each other. But for me, I'd say, Jack, not much change in the short term. And who knows after that.
One of the points you're making this week on your Milk League piece, looking back, obviously that's March that you're have the league on for this week, but the fact of solids being below the base price, effectively, that the protein for March was below base price. So they're not even getting base price in a lot of places.
Yeah, the prices quoted won't be the prices received, you know, which it's a huge cost on farms. Like, I suppose and, you know, it just goes to show, like, the co-ops are often talking about, we want to, the executives are often looking for us to use the European solids, you know, 4.2 and 3.4% protein when they're talking about milk price. So we'd be even further again below what that level would be if we're to take that. So it's a reflection, Jack, of the bad weather we've had and the impact that it has, that, you know, so many farmers, the average suppliers, aren't getting even the base milk price. So it just goes to show the seriousness of the situation.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
100%, lots more on that in the journal, as you say, Aidan. Thanks for that, and chat to you next week. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks to Grassland Agro and ESB Networks for helping us make this show happen. Thanks to you for watching and indeed for listening. Thanks to our contributors, Adam, Darren and Aidan. Thanks again to you for the questions. Any more questions, WhatsApp 0868366465. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.